If you like weird history, true crime, haunted and paranormal, then pause the podcast you're listening to right now and subscribe to Ghost Town wherever you listen to podcasts. We also have a video component to our favorite Ghost Town episodes at youtube.com/Jason Horton. Episodes like The Los Feliz Murder House, The Toxic Lady, The Black Dahlia, Janis Joplin's Hotel Room, The Haunted Roosevelt Hotel, and more. Just go to youtube.com/Jason Horton. That's youtube.com/JasonHorton. And while you're there, please subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes. Thank you. It's a Friends Without Benefits podcast. My name is Jason Horton. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is sponsored by RX Bar. Go to rxbar.com/FWB and put in the promo code FWB for 25% off. Today's guest is Monica Smith. She's an actor, a comedian, a model, and Canadian. So we're going to cover a lot of things, but we are definitely going to cover those four things. Got a nice write-up for the show in Splitsider. This is actually, we had a smaller write-up, kind of like at the bottom, like, hey, you should also check out these shows. But then for the episode with Keith Coogan, which you should definitely check out, we got a nice long review that I thought it was really nice. And to be kind of, I'll say lumped in, but to be lumped in with other great podcasts like my friend Lauren Lapkus, Allison Rosen, and then Mark Maron's WTF, that was in there too. So that felt pretty cool. We're halfway through the month of January, and we're still here. So that's good. I mean, I don't know how much can happen in 2 weeks of the new year, but I guess you never know. What I do know is RX Bar, which I've actually been eating for 2 years. I discovered it at the CrossFit gym I was going to, and I was kind of like, all right, well, if the CrossFit gym has it, it cannot be good. But no, I was like, I've been eating these bars for 2 years. They're great. One thing I really love about them, beside the taste, is that I'm particular about where protein comes from in protein bars, because I've been eating protein bars since I was about 18 or 19, because I live a very exciting life, but I've become very particular on this, where the protein comes from and the source of protein, and a lot of times it's a lot of chemicals and fillers, and you could taste that. But RX Bar, the protein comes from egg whites, which I also eat, so like the it's like real food, and then there's nuts and fruit, and really good like cocoa flavor, you know, the flavors, like it's real food. They take it from, the ingredients are short because it's real food, and I've been eating RX bars for 2 years, and I cannot get enough of them. I'm particular to kind of the fruit-ish flavored ones, like mixed berry, but I've fallen in love with the chocolate peanut butter. I'm like, uh-oh, okay, now I cannot get enough of these, and, you know, they're great pre-workout, post-workout. Sometimes I do both. I definitely have one pre-workout. There's no added sugar. It's gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free. It's all the frees that you are like, it needs to be free of this. It's good, you know, for breakfast. It's great. You can just carry it with you wherever you go. There's no excuse not to have food, quality, protein. And I love it. 11 flavors. I've had them all, and they're all really good. Like I said, I've been really falling in love with the chocolate peanut butter. And I just want more because I've, you know, I buy a variety pack. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get, you know what I mean? I need variety. But then I'm like, I just wish I had more of those chocolate peanut butter. So if you go to rxbar.com/FWB and put in the promo code FWB, you get 25% off your first order. So that's good. You get 25% off, and it is good. You can find them in a lot of places. So, you know, it's like, oh, this is a good thing that people like, but go to rxbar.com/FWB and put in the promo code FWB. And now let's talk a little more about Monica Smith. Just, yeah, I guess just tell me your social security number, address, and okay, what scared you the most, and then
we'll do this thing. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's how. Yeah. Well, that's how you start every conversation, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, here's what scares me, and here's my social security number and my address. Mm-hmm. Let's just put an end to this.
Here's my bank account, my login, and the little picture that shows up to prove it's me.
You don't have like the word like an improv reference in any of your logins, do you?
I don't.
Okay.
Do you?
No.
Yeah, no.
I don't have a lot of dignity, but like I have that. Like I got that.
I have enough going on, I hope, outside of improv where I don't have to make the entire life improv based.
But then you come back to improv and you're like, I'll take some validation, please.
Yeah.
I'll come back to this when I'm like, I don't need this anymore. And you're like, oh, I do need this.
I do. I do love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm mad for it still.
Yeah. Will you? Okay. Here's what I know about you. Because we've known, like, we've been running in the same circles for a while. You know, probably like through like the improv scene and like UCB, I guess specifically.
Yeah.
More than not. But here's what I know about you. Canadian.
True.
And that's your whole personality. Mm-hmm. Like it all revolves around that.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. I'm just like, you know, Michael J. Fox and me.
Yeah. And actually my wife.
Oh.
Not you, my wife. I know you were thinking like, what are you saying?
So she's a reflection just like we're all the same.
Yeah, yeah. You're all – no, she's from Calgary.
Oh, okay.
You're
East Coast, Toronto.
You're Toronto.
Mm-hmm. The big city.
And most recently, I took your level 2 improv class.
You did.
We will get to that. I have some notes for you.
Okay, cool.
You know what? You had some notes for me. Mm-hmm. Now I have some notes for you, and this is pretty much – the ambush?
Is this what you do? You just bring people to be like, my turn to tell you what I think.
I just bring exes in here. And I was like, you were right about me. It's usually like, you were right and I was wrong. No, nothing's changed. So how's your husband and kids? So that's kind of what I know about you is that so far. But I'm going to find out the rest.
Okay.
So you were born in Toronto.
Born in Toronto.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But Toronto's cool, right?
I think Toronto's a great city.
I think I've been to Toronto once and like Montreal once. Wife and her family are from – they're from Russia, then Russia to wherever, to Canada, and then to here. You know, it's like immigrants. We're going to get into that. We don't like immigrants. Well, I know that's a lot about what you –
I am an immigrant.
But you don't like them. You're self-hating. You're just like, I'm in – everyone else out. That's what you were always saying.
That's what I say. That's what I wear on my shirt.
Sure, yeah.
Hashtag, like, I'm in, everyone else out.
I got mine. Like, yeah. And you're like, so I've always curious about the different provinces and like Winnipeg is scary? Wait, which one is – there's some that are scary.
I feel like Winnipeg is boring. I don't want to – like, I never go there. So it's you just hear about different places. Like, Calgary is freezing cold. I think it's supposed to be the coldest place
in
Canada.
I know it was still – it was daylight at 9:45 at night, and I was like, what is happening here?
Or is it Edmonton that's real cold? Yeah, Toronto's great. It's a big city. It's pretty diverse, which is nice, and, like, you can take the subway, get across. I used to liken it from, like, New York and Chicago.
That's what
I've
heard.
New York feel, but it's not as dirty, and it's like Chicago but doesn't have as pretty architecture.
Okay. So it's – you know, you got Toronto. Plus, they film a lot.
They film, they film a lot. And every time I go home, I'm like, oh, the city looks nicer. Like, when I left, I was like, oh, this city.
So when did you leave?
I guess it's like 11 or 12 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
We had like SARS and West Nile, and there was like no work to be had.
Yeah. I thought you were saying the band, you know the band Stars?
Mm-hmm.
This band Stars is from Canada. It's kind of like on the indie whatever. And that's what I thought you were saying. Then you were like, yeah, they had the band Stars, and then you had West Nile. And I was like, wow. It's like you're just jumping from one thing to another. Okay, so there was Stars and West Nile.
Yeah, and shows would shoot in Canada, but they wouldn't cast in Canada. So it was this thing of like the people, like I was in part of Second City and I was touring, and the people I looked up to as like these amazing, hysterical actors and actresses weren't getting ahead. They were maybe in a soap ad. So it's sort of that thing of like you have to leave to
come back.
Yeah, kind of. Now I get I do more auditions for Canadian shows in LA than I ever did in Canada.
Is that anything to do with you being from there? Or is that just circumstantial?
I think now I have a better resume than I did, but they look for Canadian actors, but they cast here pretty often.
Why would they? Why does it? Like, why are they specifically? Is it because it's like, why are they casting Canadian actors? Canadian actors here to go back there specifically.
No, Cadian.
Cadian, like, you know, circadian.
Yeah.
Circadian actors.
I don't know. I think it's maybe because we all moved here because there's just not enough work up there.
Yeah.
And I think BC, at least from my knowledge from a few years ago, they used to have a good British thing
Columbia.
About...
British Columbia.
Yes, sorry.
Not British before Columbia. Christ.
No, not... You know, before Christ, that part of Canada.
Nothing existed. I don't know what you're talking about. Was, trick question.
Why is there even a before?
Yeah, it's there
just
is
Christ.
None. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a good regulation about how many... Union-wise, how many Canadian actors must be on set, how much Canadian crew, and Toronto didn't used to have that. I think it's changed at this point. I hope it has. But it just made a difference about getting work out there. So moving here was all of a sudden like I could see all these castings and they would cast here.
So when you were – so growing up, were you always like, I want to be an improv teacher?
Uh-huh.
That always. Was it, right?
Mm-hmm. Always.
Yeah.
Just like... I always loved acting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was that kid that, you know, went into the bathroom and then reacted out. I was super shy, so I would do it for nobody, but react out whatever I did.
Kind of like
saw.
Some improv shows.
Yeah.
Or stand up, you know what I mean? You're still doing it for nobody sometimes.
Yeah, it's for yourself. It doesn't matter if they're there. Yeah, so I've always, always loved it. And then I think I'm fortunate because we had, it's a big Canadian, like Kids in the Hall, SCTV.
Degrassi?
Yeah, I never watched Degrassi.
Oh, wow.
I lived on Degrassi Street, but I never watched it.
Was it? Living on Degrassi Street, is that related to the show or that's just a circle?
It's just a street. And,
so it has nothing
Queen
to do
street.
With. Yeah, they didn't get it, the name for the show or anything like
I
that.
I think they did. I think it's based. Like, I never watched the show. I'm a bad Canadian that way. I've never seen it. I know Drake is in a wheelchair. Like, there's so little I know about Degrassi.
It's like living on Seinfeld Street and being like, I never watched Seinfeld. so when you. So that was always kind of like, you're like, this is what I want to do. And you knew that, like, right away?
Yeah, it's always been the thing that I wanted to do.
What'd your family think about that?
They were okay with it. My dad acted a little bit when he was younger. And
are they from?
No, my mom's an immigrant. From Denmark, and then my dad's family is Irish, and he came in, and then from Montreal.
That makes sense. Looking at you, it's very
illegal.
Very white, but like past white.
Yeah.
Denmark is like past white.
Oh, Denmark is just a bunch of blondes.
Do you go to? Have you been to Denmark?
I've never been to Denmark.
Oh, I always want to go there. I was the closest. I was in Switzerland last year.
Hmm.
That was fun.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go. Same thing. I just have never gotten around to it.
Yeah.
One day.
Here's the thing: is I'm very world traveled.
Mm-hmm.
That's like kind of like if I had to say there's something negative about me is like I'm too. World traveled, I guess.
What's the thing you always talk about when you talk about yourself?
So, yeah,
that's the
it's
thing
like,
you always mention.
It's like it's something I wish I could change. I wish I could just be a little more like, you know, stationary.
Oh, could I see less of everything?
Yeah, it's just like I'm getting this world view and. Yeah. But that's.
It's difficult.
It's not about me. This is about you.
Right.
But were they like, well, you're in Toronto, like Los Angeles or New York, like that's where you have to be. Was there anything like that where you're like, oh, I'm gonna. There's a limit to what I could do, or are you like, I'm going to get out of this town?
I think I always said I would move. Yeah. I've been saying it since I was little. And then my parents were just like, get an education. As long as you get an education, we don't care what you do. But then I started modeling first, and that they loved. I think the vanity in my family was like, yes, do that. Yeah. Go travel and do that.
And what gets, like, because there's a point, I wouldn't know this, but when you're not a model.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then all of a sudden you are that, or at least you're going to that. How did that happen when you were like, I'm going to be a model?
I mean, I was a tall kid.
Right.
And I would get stopped a lot. And then one day I got stopped in a mall with my best friend. And she gave me a card and was like, you know, you should be a model. And I feel like this happens often.
And it's sometimes it's like short, fat people like me that could get a card like that too. You know what I mean? So sometimes it's not legit.
Yeah.
But for you, it was
legit. And I always say, if people tell you to pay money to be a model, don't do it.
Yeah.
Because they want you. So if you're paying for anything, then it's not right.
Yeah.
So they gave me free classes to learn the makeup, and they gave me free photo shoots. And then I was in New York within 2 weeks.
What was your first modeling gig?
I think it was a runway show. Yeah. I think the first thing I did. Well, no, I did photo shoots, and then it was runway stuff.
And was that – were you like – I'm walking down a runway for real. Is that like a weird thing? It's just something I feel like I see And I, like, what's that like?
It's more weird because you stand in the, and you know, I'm like a virginal 15-year-old, and you're standing there, and these men and women are dressing you and putting your shoes on for you. So you kind of just let people touch your body and place clothes on you, and then they put words on a board for how they want you to walk down the runway, like fierce, angry, sexy, like whatever.
They all sound the same.
I know. Right? There would be like these weird things. You're like, okay, and everyone's smoked, and I've never smoked. And a lot of times they'd give you drinks, and I didn't drink. So it would just be like, hey, get relaxed, women. Just I want you to feel your bodies and walk down the runway. And I was like, I don't want to trip in these heels.
So did you smoke or drink at 15?
No. I mean, I drank.
Of course. Yeah. Lame.
Because you're like in New York going to a bar, and I never got carded. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to have a drink. And I didn't know you had to mix drinks. I remember thinking like, oh, you just drink vodka out of a glass.
That's when it all started going downhill for you. When you were like, I just drink it out of the bottle. It's already in the bottle. Why do I need to put it in a glass?
I have a Mickey. That's all I need.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Yeah.
So you start off modeling at 15?
15.
Because by 16 and a half, you're done, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're washed
up. You're old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what was your modeling career?
It was all runway and some.
I'm not saying it's over. I'm saying I'm not indicating that it's. I don't know the life cycle of modeling. You know what I mean? I guess you're always modeling, right?
Well, when I was like 15, I looked older. So then they used to tell me, you can't do these magazines because you look too old. And then it would be like 2 years later, they're like, oh, you're too young for these things. Like, it's just whatever image is in.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a – and you live in New York. Like, I lived in model apartments. So it was just me and a bunch of girls.
So you're like on Models, Inc. Like, was that – remember there's a show?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was like that. What's it like living with other models?
I think the first time I lucked out because it was older models and they felt protective of me and they both took me to different, they saved me in uncomfortable model situations, which was nice. And like one would be like, I got you tickets for this amusement park. And the other one's like, I got you alcohol. Let's go to these clubs and bars. So I would see this lifestyle that was very different from what
and
I
your
was
family
used to.
Was just like, this is awesome.
Yeah. My mom, like, yeah, my parents bought me. When I was going to New York, they tell you to like buy like nude underwear and black underwear and stuff like that, so you're set up. And I went with my mom, and we had to buy thongs. And I was like, I don't want a thong. And I went with a Snoopy thong because I was still so young. Yeah. Like I was, I don't know, 15. I was just like, I don't want to own these things. My parents were excited. I think they liked the idea of me doing that.
And there's a lot of money in this, I'm guessing?
Or? Yeah, but you end up, you pay for your, I mean, I did all right. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah. But you pay for your living situation, and then I would fly, so I'd pay for those flights and such.
So you were – what was – how did school fit in?
I would go to school when I could. I mean, I was a smart kid, so
it was easier to kind of like – yeah, okay.
I didn't tell anyone I was a model because I didn't want people to know. So I would go to school and like just be like, oh, I was at my grandmother's, or like try and lie and not let people know until I think of either a magazine came out or a friend said something, and then it got out. But that I lasted a pretty good amount of time without anyone knowing, which I liked.
And how did they treat you once they found out?
Oh, women. They hated me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Girls all hated me.
Yeah.
And it would, I like never wore makeup, and I was an athlete and in the band, but yeah, it's, you know.
So were you doing things to, do you think you were also doing things to kind of offset, like I'm modeling, but I'm also going to be like, I'm an athlete, or, you know, I'm interested in acting, like to kind of like combat that. So I'm like, I don't want to be just thought of as like a model, to kind of fight back against it.
It was a little, cause everyone thought models were dumb, and that was really frustrating that people would treat you like you're an idiot and talk to you in a certain manner. And I hated that. I was also a sick kid, so I feel like my time, if I wasn't modeling and stuff, I did spend a lot of time not feeling well.
So that
was a big part of.
Is that just like generally you just got sick?
I have autoimmune disease, so I've been sick since I was little. So I just get sick a lot and often.
Okay.
So yeah, as a kid, that would happen. So whenever it was like those were the two. I'd either be like in New York doing these shows and doing all this, or I'd be home in the band track and then sick from something and home for a week or two.
So you always had – there was never like – nothing. Like, there was never just a void of, like, nothing's happening. It's either you're, like, modeling, or you have, like maybe an intense sickness, or you're, like, pole vaulting, or whatever it is that you're doing.
Hurdles.
I did hurdles back then, yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't very good at that.
Yeah, I was all, yeah, I've been sick since I was little, so that's always been a part of my life, and then I'd do these really exciting, crazy things, and try to be healthy as I did them, and then come home, and then my body would be, like, done and exhausted.
And then you just like just be like smoke another cigarette and drink the vodka, and
yeah,
you're just
never
like
smoke, but yeah,
yeah. Has being sick has that worked itself out?
It's autoimmune disease, so I'll forever just not be the healthiest person, but I'm fine. And I'm much healthier now because once they figure it out, then they can treat it properly. But as a kid, you get like, you know, and I had free healthcare, thankfully, but you get diagnosed with different things until they figure it out. So that took some time. And then once we know what it was like, okay, we can move forward.
All right. So your model now, does modeling ever, the modeling career ever like end and you switch gears, or like what happens with that?
I started studying at Second City, and I hated the way people treated me in the modeling industry because, one, it is, you know, this Weinstein stuff is coming out. Modeling world is another level of
sure.
that. And I hated that, and I hated how people just assumed you're dumb and, you know, conversation wasn't something people
And this is all you could
you.
Do, and, like, you have, like, one function, and then that's it. Yeah.
It was just your body. Yeah. It, you know, no need to say anything. So that got really tiresome, so I wanted to do more. And when I found Second City, I loved improv.
And so. Second City in because it's there's also a touring company. You're in a touring company mm-hmm. there. How does the Second City from, like, you know, Chicago, the lineage, just briefly, go from Chicago to Toronto?
Damn. Well, I mean, Andrew Alexander, who owns Second City, is Canadian. I think he opened the Chicago one first. I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
But the Canadian one had the SCTV crew, so it was like John Candy, Catherine mm-hmm. O'Hara, Eugene Levy. So it was this like John Favreau. And Gilda Radner came up, and Martin Short. So it was like this mecca of amazing comedy. So I think it has a really good history in Canada, and they had like this famous building that no longer exists. So I think just everybody in Toronto knew about it, and then Kids in the Hall. So like I think Toronto had a good little comedy mecca.
And it had what made like what was the thing that made you go there for the first time? Or
SCTV played every day on City TV mm-hmm. at 1 p.m. And when I was sick a lot, I could watch every episode of SCTV all the time. So I think I loved that comedy and needed it. I was like a funny kid, so I needed like to get that out somehow. So when I found out about those classes, it was like...
Okay. And how did they take you? Like, you know, coming from like the modeling world.
Oh, I was the only woman in most of my classes. Yeah. It was, you know, I don't know. There's... so many levels of sexism that happens. I think that's just how it is. Yeah.
Did you feel like you had to, and you know, I know that's, I mean, everyone's putting themselves out there, you know, and putting their best self out there. But did you feel like you're like, I need to do twice as good as my male counterparts just to be on the same level, like as far as being taken seriously?
It felt like it. Like I started wearing baggy clothes and hoodies and trying to dress down. Because teachers used to make remarks of like, you'd walk on stage and we're gonna look at your body, we're not gonna hear you. So I'd have to prove that I was funny before I'd get a laugh. Because like, I remember a teacher being like, oh, the women will hate you and the men will just check you out. And I was like, that's such a dickish thing to say to a student.
And a guy can just wear like, whatever. Just, it's like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's like you don't even have to think about what they're wearing. And not to say that it makes them funny or whatever, but just guys are just...
Yeah, I had to win. I felt like I had to win a room over. I always felt like I had to sort of get the audience to like me, be funny, and be like, see, I'm funny too. Cool. Now I'll just continue the show. That's how it felt, at least.
So how does spending time at Second City and being invested in that affect the modeling or whatever else was going on? Because it seemed like you had a lot going on.
I kept trying to quit modeling.
They kept sucking you back in?
So many times. Yeah, I have quit it a lot of times because I didn't enjoy the just being objectified, and that's it. That kind of really got to me. And maybe I should look back and be like, oh, that you can become an actor through modeling now in a way that I don't think you could when I was a teen, at least.
Especially if the internet was maybe a little more prevalent, or
you
get more exposure, there's more opportunities.
Yeah, and because I liked being seen as funny, I was like, oh, this is what I'm good at, so I'd rather be seen this way. So I kept quitting modeling, and then I'd go to school and then do improv, and then I'd do another modeling job. So I kept going back and forth between it all. And at the same time, I was sick a lot. So it was whatever I could do at the time. And then I hit my peak and was like, I'm not going to get any work in Toronto. And I left.
Peak in modeling?
In acting. I got onto Turco, which was great, but there were so few roles already for women. And, like, there were no auditions happening, and it was just, like, there's nothing that's going to come from this. So
you kind of hit, like, it was, like, maximum, you know.
Yeah.
Like, the apex of where you can go with. And how long were you at that, at Second City before you were like, I'm coming to...
Not long. The conservatory program is 2 years, so I did that. I got on the tour co before I finished the conservatory program. And then I did that for a little where I toured with, like, schools. Like, they have different levels of tour co. I don't remember the colors or codes. And I would do, like, the kids ones and, like, do kid shows in high schools and such. And it paid, I think, $60 a show.
How many shows would you get in, like, during a tour?
I think after 70. Not a tour. So you would just go do a show, come back. Like, it's called tour co, but, like... Yeah.
Like a remote type shit, like, you know, doing remotes or whatever they are.
You drive and do one school a day or maybe do three schools in Sarnia and then drive back or whatever it was. So it wasn't like we were like, there were different tiers of the tour co. I was the tier that did that level of stuff. So it wasn't crazy.
And was the money, like, were you ever, you know, sure, maybe you made more modeling, I'm guessing. Was it ever, money ever like an issue with any of this, what was going on? Or you always had enough?
Yeah, money was always, I've paid my way myself. My whole life, so yeah, I paid my own university, all that, no help from anyone. So definitely needed the money. That's, yeah. So that's why also I think I'd be like, all right, I'll do this modeling job because I can make some money and pay off school because, you know, university is expensive. Yeah. Yeah.
So at when do you, so this is, you decide to move to Los Angeles 12 years ago? Is that?
I guess so, yeah.
Around there?
Around there. I think my mom will probably correct me and tell me.
Yeah. Well, she's listening.
Yeah.
She's
right
actually
now.
Here. So when you came to Los Angeles, had you did you come out and check it out and scope it out and be like, what's the deal?
No.
Yeah.
I was choosing between, because I'd lived in New York through modeling back and forth. So I liked the city, but I didn't see it as an acting city, at least from my vantage point at the time. So I was choosing between London and L.A. because I heard London had great theater and clowning schools. And then I knew L.A. was to get into movies, which is what I always wanted. So I drove out here. And then worked for cash jobs, like doing transcription for like Playboy stuff. I transcribed all those Playboy TV shows. And then I booked like a pitch. I would clean up scripts. So I think I got my first visa doing that.
Okay. And then that's how you're able to stay and work and stuff like that through. Because that was probably somewhat of an issue, right?
Being like, oh my God, yeah.
You know, I need to legally work here.
Legally work here. Yeah, because you have to cross the border. Yeah. You can't stay in America. I think it's more than 6 months at a time. So
and you can't just runway yourself through those border things. They just, you know what I mean? Maybe it'll work sometimes, but, you know.
Oh, no. Even when I modeled, they used to go through everything in my suitcase to see if they could catch me that I was trying to work in America. Because I didn't always, like, do a job with the proper paperwork at the time. Yeah. Sometimes they would just fly you in, do a job, we'll pay you, whatever. So then I'd be at the border and they'd quiz me and I'd be like, I'm staying at my Aunt Sharon's.
Yeah. She lives on Seinfeld Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. See? So you're here in Los Angeles and then you're like, now you're taking cash jobs and whatever. What are your like goals? Like, what are you looking to do?
Well, you know, movies, TV, like that's what I wanted. And then it just worked out that I got like a pitch, like cleaning up scripts. So the writing stuff kind of helped me there. And then I was like, oh, well, let's try Second City. And at the time, I went to Second City, and I was like, hey, I toured, and I'd love to be a part of this. And the person who was running it at the time was like, you can take classes of mine if you want. And that was it.
Oh,
like,
you thought you were going to walk right in there.
I did. You know.
And probably, you know what I mean? Like,
it was a little humbling, and maybe I deserved it. And I was also super young.
Was it warranted? Were they right in retrospect?
Well, no, because as soon as the next AD came, he was wonderful and was like, teach, perform, come here. But that dude was like,
Is this when Second City was... down Melrose. Okay, I remember I took like one random class with a teacher there when I was kind of getting into improv. But, you know, obviously now it's on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
The great stage. One of my favorite stages.
It's a nice stage.
Out of all, I was like, I've done a bunch of shows, random shows with, you know, people we probably know in common. And I was just like, yeah, I love that stage. Did you take a lot of classes at Second City?
I didn't take any in LA because I'd spent 2 years in the conservatory program and like worked for them. So it felt, and like I did corporate jobs and gigs with them. So it felt really weird to be put like at a different set, like being told that like, no, you're not good enough. And it didn't come across like it was warranted perhaps. And I don't think it was. So then I went to UCB and UCB had just started, I think a year before or that year. And I started,
that's probably like 2006.
I think so. I think they were out like, their 10-year anniversary, like, a few years ago.
Yeah. I feel like 2005 was the first, you know. I think I first took a class there in 2007.
Oh, I did garage comedy first.
Oh, I remember garage comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I started doing like character bits. I wasn't doing improv at all.
I did two garage comedies, one that did really well, and then did another one, and just people hated it. Hated it. And I was like, oh, I want to do this. I want to do this weird comedy. And I did it at like it was either a Not Too Shabby type show at UCB, and I was like, oh, this went really well here. Did it there, and they were just not digging it. Yeah, I remember garage comedy.
I always remember Charlene Yee went on stage once, and this is before she became like famous Charlene Yee, and just had a baseball that she put eyes on and talked and bombed.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, fuck, this is a hard audience.
Yeah.
Because like really funny people were bombing, but that's how we all, I think, found our voices a bit.
Yeah, just kind of like seeing. And sometimes you have to go out there and just like put it out there.
Yeah, just try it. Because I would try different character bits. And then from there, people there were like, oh, you should go to UCB. So then I started, I went into UCB and like.
Did you take classes?
I took the 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
They let me like skip a class. And then I think after 4, I got on a Herald team.
Yeah. And that was before the Herald team, like, you know, it was like, I don't know what it is now. I auditioned like once or twice, but it's like, you know, it's like 25,000 people audition for one spot or so, whatever it is.
It's a lot. Even then, I remember signing up was a big deal. Yeah. And it was very nerve-wracking. Yeah. And they didn't have a lot of teams. And it was, you know, 2 women to 6 dudes.
Yeah.
So the spots weren't, there weren't a lot of spots.
I had a lot of, I had all great teachers there.
Yeah.
I took like sketch classes with like Matt Besser. Like he had like a secret class and it was great. And I had Walsh and Roberts and then like Billy Merritt and Seth Morris. Like really like Daniel Schneider. I had really good people. Like I was like really stoked.
Oh, yeah. I had Owen Burke was amazing. Yeah. Brian Husky.
Yeah, I had him. Yeah.
Sean Connery taught me sketch and I loved it. Yeah. And then, Ian changed my career. But Besser, Walsh, like all of them did specialty classes, improv ones. Where it was like I cried in one of Walsh's, I remember.
Oh, I was in, Matt Besser was in, it was literally the hardest class I've ever taken. My stomach is constantly tight. And you're just, because you can't, he's like, what do you think? You know, it's like pitching these sketches. And it was, you guys from like the Birthday Boys and like all those kind of people. And it was just like a very intense, like, experience.
Yeah.
Just like, you had to like, honestly, you're like, just always like aware of what's going on. Because you never know who's going to turn to you. He's like, no, that's not funny. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
How would you change that joke? And I'm like, And somebody's like, yeah, he yells at you the least. So he seems to like you. Like that was, but he wasn't, you know what I mean? Matt Besser's like not, seems like he's a cool dude.
Yeah.
You know, I've had him on one of my other podcasts and obviously super talented and stuff like that. But yeah, those classes are hard.
They're class, but I love them. And they're all great at what they do in their own specific way. Yeah, so Besser's hard in one way. Walsh is in another.
So how did you say Ian Roberts change your career?
Yeah, I think Ian did because I was doing Harold's and then I was on a mod team and then I hosted a show. So like I was always at the theater, always there.
And you were Second City, were you ancillarily?
I started teaching and just having a show there.
Okay.
So, but pretty much, like, I would say, like, 4 nights of my week was UCB. And then Ian was, like, he recommended me to Principato. And when I went in for the meeting, Peter was, like, he's recommended 3 people in 20 years, and you're one of them. And that was,
no
like,
pressure.
Scary. Yeah, and I was, like, okay. And he's, like, we're going to test you out. We're going to put you on a Pepsi ad, and let's see how you do. And I was extra background, and it was, from Arrested Development. It was all funny people. It was like Owen Burke, Will
Arnett,
Andy Daly, Rob Hubel, all these guys.
No pressure.
And then me as an extra. And so they're shooting. And, you know, they were nice. But
what are they trying to test
separate.
You? What are they trying to get out of you from being an extra?
Well, Peter was getting me like a SAG.
Okay.
Like, what is it called?
Voucher or whatever.
The voucher. Yeah. And he was also like, let's just see how you do. So then I was sitting next to Rob for one of the bits. And the camera turns to him, and I was like, I have to take a fucking chance.
Yeah.
And so I said something funny and very blue.
Yeah.
And cameramen put their cameras down. Everyone started cheering, and they all walked up to Rob, and were like, that's the best line of the day. And Rob was like, Monica said it. And it changed. The whole room changed the way they spoke to me. I was then invited to their table for lunch.
Yeah.
And Peter signed me after that. So.
And that's cool that Rob didn't take credit for.
He could have been a dick, but he was. He's always been a nice guy.
I did a sketch with him. I did a sketchgram with him at. I did a sketch with him at UCB. It was amazing.
Yeah, he's super.
Just
funny.
Like doing it. Like I was like, oh my god, I'm doing a sketch. This is surreal. I was like, this is one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And so that's a very cool story.
I just worked with him on his show. Want to see a dead body?
I saw that. Now I want to ask you about that. This is kind of. I'm jumping a little bit. I feel like. Did you work with a guy named MacLave? Is that name? There's a picture of you with somebody that looks like somebody that I'm working on stuff with. Okay. You posted a picture on Facebook. Who is that with?
It is, right? Because he's from, he was the one with the nipples in the Adam Sandler Wedding Singer.
Yeah, he plays Guglia.
Yes.
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 Yeah, it's MacLave. Yeah.
Yes.
I've done two movies. Yeah. Yeah, I did a movie with him that's actually going to Slam Dance, I found out.
Oh, goodness.
And then I'm doing a movie with him right now that we're currently filming. And I saw a picture, I was like, that's him. But then I was like, I'm a huge fan of his, so maybe I'm always just seeing him in every picture.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about that separately.
No, that was
but he's
him.
He's such a cool guy.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like offset when we're just sitting around talking, wonderful human.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, on set, just such a great yes-ander. And, like, you know, we were just sort of bouncing off of each other. Man, he was great.
Yeah.
And Wedding Singer was one of my favorite movies.
I watched it again recently before I worked with him, like, just coincidentally. And I was like, this is so good. His character is so...
It's great.
You know, I was like, no, he is, like, he has the money and the confidence and the stuff. Julia, why don't you just go with him? Adam Sandler's character doesn't have a job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why is – who says who's the good guy and the bad guy?
Gross. He's an artist. I mean, he won't make money.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
God. Security, girl.
Yeah, think
right?
about it. Meatballs in your hand. You can't live off of
yeah,
that.
I know, from piano lessons.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're now Principato, mm-hmm. which is good.
It was great.
I just hip-pocketed for them for a bit. And I'm only doing some stuff through Yahoo through them. But whatever. It was a great experience, but short-lived. But so where did that take you?
They got me auditions. And then, you know, so I was booking here and there jobs. Yeah. And then
like TV or?
Yeah, like guest star little parts.
Yeah.
Or no, I think my first big thing was I did 2 seasons of Disaster Date. So I did a lot. I've done so many pranking shows.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of pranking, which is sort of improv-based.
I've auditioned for a lot of those.
Yeah. Yep. So I did a lot of that over the years. So they got me that kind of opportunity. And Jason Goldberg was great with that. So I was like working. And then I started, because of Maude, I was writing so much. And I used to do like musical Maude stuff that they were like, you should think about writing and pitching.
And for people, the Maude teams were the sketch-based teams
mm-hmm.
compared to the Harold teams, which are the improv-based teams.
Yes.
Not everyone knows what a Maude team is.
But everyone knows Harold and Maude.
Yeah, no, nobody knows what any of those things are.
I know.
Is that your password? Is it Maude Team Girl?
Yeah.
You know,
I was
05
once on a team.
Team, yeah, remember?
Number 5. Yeah.
So you're working, and then where are you like, where do I go next? Like, what do I do? Because it's always like a thing, like, what do I do next? Or what else do I want to do? Or what's my next move?
Yeah, it's hard because you can only do so much. You can only be cast. Like, you can't choose, like, hey, hire me. Like, so that was tough, and getting in the rooms was tough. So then, because of Maude, I was writing. So they were like, start writing your own stuff. So at the time, Funny or Die was big. So I would write sketches for them to make. Or I don't think they made many. And then Yahoo, I sold a couple series, like web series stuff,
yeah.
too.
I did a lot of Yahoo Sketchy.
Oh, yeah, Yahoo Sketchy. So that was great. That kind of helped because I
was that
I
through
pitched,
Principato at all?
Yeah, they got
that
me
same
in.
Year. Yeah, I did some stuff. I wrote one that College Humor produced for them, and then I was in a bunch.
It made such a difference because I was writing them. I was the lead. I edited. So then, one, I learned that whole business side of it, which was crazy, and I didn't realize. And then I think it was helpful to, like, work off of something you were pitching. So that's when I sort of quit all sketch stuff and was like, let's focus writing to actually making money.
So were you not performing as much?
I just quit the sketch. I kept all my improv. So I've always been on, like, a bunch of teams.
Yeah.
So performing a few times a week because I just love it. But, yeah, it also makes – you make no money.
No,
like
I know.
It's such a –
Well, teaching you make a little.
Teaching you make a little.
Yeah. I remember I was coaching 2 teams at IO. And I was like, it's like you can't say no to the money, but it is a huge output.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I remember I was on, I did a season of this TBS prank show, and Matt Besser was a guest, and he was brilliant about breaking down the comedy for what we wanted that episode. And he was like, so you still coaching? And at the time, I was on a TV show coaching 9 teams and still teaching a class. And I was like, yep, because I need to survive out here. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's business.
Yeah,
it's, hard.
It's very hard. It's a lot of output for, you know what I mean? Like, but you can't say no to it, and you want to keep all those teams. You want to keep, you know, and you care about the team. You're just like, you want to make sure they're doing well, and you got to deal with different personalities sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, some like delicate, some not delicate, some delicate, you know, different people, different. It's what makes it exciting. And you got to be the kind of neutral, but firm, and also you got to keep giving.
Yeah, it is work. Like, I think if you're really good at it, like, you're emotionally invested, you care about each person, so each person you're giving private personal notes to for them as a team to grow, or you're creating a form with them, or, like, yeah, I you can get really invested into those now, teams.
In, you know, when you're very kind of very involved in the comedy scene in Los Angeles, in the improv scene, how, like, and we talked about how, you know, modeling was, like, you know, it was just, some objectification. Did that kind of was the comedy scene less of that? I mean, I just, you know, obviously, you know, the climate right now and kind of always been, it's, you know, it's to be a female in this, it turns out, you know what I mean? Like, some people are shitty, I guess is my bottom line. Shitty beyond just being like rude or a dick or like, you know, aloof, like actively shitty. Was that something you encountered or you saw it, like, what was that like? You don't have to get into too much detail. I don't want, like,
yeah, oh, you don't.
Don't name. Don't know. No snitch. You don't have to snitch on here. Snitching. No, you don't have to snitch. I'm not a snitch podcast. I'm just. It's just an obvious thing to kind of discuss, considering you've been in the comedy scene for so long and you're so prevalent in it that, you know, you'd have something to say one way or the other.
I think it's unfortunately, at least my experience of it, is it's constant.
Yeah.
I had coaches. I remember doing a trampoline scene on stage for Harold Knight, and a coach was like, "You shouldn't jump on stage." And I was like, "What do you mean?" We were in the action, it was object work, and he was like, "Everyone's just staring at your tits bouncing." And I would wear baggy shirts and, like,
yeah,
same thing.
I would not say you're somebody who's like walking around like in a prom dress or anything like that, or you know.
And that's like a coach that you're paying to get a note from, and he's just telling me that my tits are too distracting.
And chances are you probably had like a pretty, like, your coach was probably pretty up there in the, without, you know, listen, it's not a snitch podcast, but if I had to guess your level of where you were at and who you could have had as a coach, it's probably on the upper-ish echelons of coaching-ish.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate, but also being, you know, men are... it's always, there's always someone reminding me of what I look like or what I could be doing, or date me and I'll get you this and you can be on this show. And it's constant. And then when I teach, it used to be, I had students be like, "Can you smile more?" Like, I taught at Second City while I was on Herald teams, and I'm like bleach blonde hair in my 20s. Like, I'm young. I'm like, so I, maybe people don't like being taught by someone younger than them, but men used to be dicks. They would ask me out in front of an entire class. They would like, "Oh, do you sure you know comedy?" And I was like, "I'm your teacher that you're paying to learn from." Yeah. But because how I look, you're going to ignore my notes right now. So that shit happened all the time. It happens way less now because I think people kind of know who I am a little bit more in the community.
Sure.
But yeah, it happened all the time.
But if it's not happening to you, it's happening to somebody else probably somewhere.
Yes.
You know, and the people are, you know, there's also people that are just, they're insecure. I mean, my thing is with, you know, I'm very specific about who coaches me with improv. It's nothing to do with age or gender or anything like that. But it's like, I prefer to be coached by someone who's very experienced, to who have at least have as much experience as I have.
That's how I feel. I would, like, I don't want to be coached by, and that sounded dickish, but yeah, I want someone who's been doing it longer than me.
That's, you know, and I've been doing it, like, since 2004.
Yeah.
And then, you know, started IO in 2006. So I'll even say 2006. Around there, even though, you know, I'll agree that, like, people that are on the, that are kind of on the outside looking in, that don't have to be on stage, like, making all those moves, and they have the point of view of being able to kind of be one step ahead is always great. Somebody could be only doing it for 5 years and still be like, "Hey, listen, you know, you keep turning your back to the audience," whatever. There's people that could give valuable things, and I'm not discounting that. And there's people that have been doing it for longer that probably wouldn't give as good notes as somebody who's been doing it for less time. But it's just my rule that, like, I want, if I'm paying somebody, be doing it at least somewhat as long as I've been doing it.
Kind of agree. I don't want to, like, say the Malcolm Gladwell thing of 10,000 hours is, like, 100% truthful, but I do think there's something to it where you want to be taught. I also like someone who's trained at other theaters.
Yeah.
I think UCB is amazing. I think Second City is amazing. Like, all these schools are great, but you have to learn from all of them. I think the best players I've ever seen are people that learned from different places.
Oh, me too. That's why everyone, you know, I remember back, this is kind of going off, but, you know, back in like the kind of the, I felt like it was like a very IOUCB thing for
it was.
A bit. But most of those people did both. But then other people were like, then I think it was people that were newer had a thing where it was like a gang mentality. Ugh, that is bad and this is good, or this is bad and that is good. And I was like, I feel like the people that I like, I've seen at both places, and I'm just seeing. And, you know, maybe you switch, you know, if you do a Harold at UCB is going to be maybe a little different than you do one at IO. But after a while, it's just is what it is. I just felt like there was a lot of that back then. I was very anti, what's the word? Kind of not antisocial, but I didn't like hang out at the bar. I didn't like go to a ton of parties. You know, I went to like UCB's New Year's Eve party a couple times and stuff like that. So I was never like really very involved in that. Maybe because I started doing improv when I was like 30. So it was already like old when I started. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I just never got involved in that. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So which is the best? You know what I mean?
I think people were constantly fighting on what theater is okay and what's not and who performs where. And there's so much judgment. It sucks.
It's like politics now a little bit.
It was a little bit when it's like, you know, the UCB dudes, they didn't start UCB from nothing. They were training and meeting at IO and some at like, I think Horatio Second City. Like some of them are different places.
Yeah.
It's like,
So let's, okay, so now you're, let's, I just want to just kind of, we need the whole timeline. Of you know what I mean? We need to get the whole story.
Okay.
So you're Principato, you're doing stuff, you're not doing as much sketch, you're still doing improv, you're doing Funny or Die, then what?
I wrote like the web series and that sold and that helped me. And so I was pitching like pilot stuff I would write, which was helpful. And then booking shows. And that's it. I feel like,
Succeeding in what you came here to do.
Well, like guest starring. I mean, It's a tough business because you can work somewhat consistently.
And then not work.
Yeah. Or I've been like, I've booked, I think it's 11 pilots and only one's been picked up.
Yeah.
So it's this weird thing where like pilot season, people get real excited. And I'm like, it's exciting, but just remember.
Don't post it on Facebook.
Whenever people write booked it.
Oh, no. Like, I hate. And trust me, there's been times where I've wanted to like, I've been so excited. And I was like, no, because what if, and even if it does, like, oh, yeah, we're filming it. Maybe it doesn't, you know, get picked up. You know, and what if it gets, then maybe it gets picked up. Okay, great. Maybe you can say then at that point when it airs. But then after that, you know, or a commercial doesn't, you know, you book a commercial, you film it, it doesn't air, you just get that whatever fee for the day or something. And it's a bummer. You don't know until it's actually happening.
It is weird. Like I bumped into a friend last week and we were like, hey, we did that pilot for CBS together like 7 years ago that nothing happened with that I've never seen the tape of. Like that kind of shit where you're
like. But you think like this could be. The beginning of like the new beginning of it.
Yeah, I think I've learned at a young age because modeling is very much like you walk in and you think you have the job and then they just stare at you and you're like, you're not pretty enough, or your teeth are this, or your eyes are that. Like, I've learned to not get excited for something until it's written, you've signed the papers, it's done. Especially after all those pilots, because you would get excited and be like, finally, I'm here in LA, I can do this shit. And then be like, oh, didn't get picked up, cool. I'll go back to keep teaching and coaching until that next.
Yeah. You always got. People like me that'll pay you to tell me how good or bad I am at this.
Cool.
Yeah, it's always good. You're always good to fall back on. Great. So now you've now you're working, you're teaching and performing at Nerdist as well, in addition to all the other stuff you're doing.
Yeah,
you're not teaching any modeling classes here.
No,
I keep
modeling.
Checking.
I know.
Keep checking. You know what I mean? Like you know what though? I feel like. It'd be a social experiment. I bet you if you did, though, you would probably get people to sign up because Los Angeles is weird. Not that you'd want them to, and not that you'd have anything. I don't know what you would say, but I feel like I've seen weirder in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, for years, I never spoke about it.
Yeah.
Like, people didn't know that I modeled. I kept that shit so quiet because as soon as you tell a comedian that, they just don't see you as funny anymore.
It's like the antithesis of comedy for some reason.
Yeah, because it's like you can't be, I don't know.
I've heard like, you know, maybe listen to other podcast comedians, but it's like if you're a comedian, you have to become born from dysfunction and you have to be like this kind of outsider, or you don't have the looks or athletic ability or or that kind of confidence. So you go to comedy, and it's not fair that, like, a hot guy or a hot girl can both be funny and have the looks and have, like, a somewhat of a normal, you know, childhood and upbringing. Like, it's not fair.
I just watched this interview show, and this Canadian guy interviews comedians, and he interviewed Jane Lynch and then, the lead from The Office.
Steve Carell?
Steve Carell, yeah. And Steve Carell...
He's your second city guy.
He talks about how attractive people aren't funny.
Yeah.
And he does a whole rant on how, like, you can't be funny if you're attractive. And he's like, you shouldn't be thinking about your body and working out. And it's just like, come on,
Wait, Steve Carell said that?
Steve Carell did in this show.
How long ago was that?
It's new. It's his comedians... What did I watch it on Netflix?
I don't know, but here's, like, Steve Carell, like, has really upped his look game when he's been in Hollywood. Like, his hair is more...
He's slimmed down.
He's, you know, probably whatever. So that's a little, I mean, if he let himself go, I'd be like, okay, hey, listen, you're living it and you're saying it, but you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, I just didn't appreciate that because it's like, it's still that stereotype of, oh, the only, you know, just because someone's, also just because someone's attractive doesn't mean they don't have a basis for finding comedy if we're all coming from dark paths or whatever that
is. And attractive people have dark thoughts and have screwed up childhoods and, you know, like the most successful people that have it all give it all up. They kill themselves, whatever the case may be. And then there's people that seem like, oh, wow, you don't seem to have anything. It's like, I'm happy. So it's like a very it's really hard to kind of gauge like what is like successful and who is happy. It's not based on the things like, oh, if I had all those things, I'd be happy. Some people have all those things that are not happy.
Yeah.
And I was like, how could you be happy? You don't have all these things. And he's like, I'm just happy with what I have.
I've just found the flow and ease in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're at Nerdist, and then I signed up for your level 2 class.
You did, and then we hadn't seen each other in years.
Yeah. I got kind of burnt out from, like, you know, 12 plus years of improv, and then IO, and then I took a year off of like pretty much everything, and I was like, I don't really leave the house that much. I'm going to force myself to, and I didn't want to take improv with anywhere else I've taken it or. I was going to run into anyone I knew. I was just very like doing it just to kind of like kind of on the down low.
Yeah.
And then, I heard, you know, a lot of people that I knew from UCB or IO and they're like, yeah, Nerdist is great. So I took, I took Rebecca's class, because I knew of her and I, you know, through IO and stuff like that. But she's doing it for a very long time. And then you were teaching level 2 and I was like, yeah, and I was like, I knew you were doing it for a very long time.
I think people get tired of improv and either they quit or like you get burnt out. And I found the thing, I have to find something new to focus on.
Yeah.
Like what can I, or I'd start a new form or I'd play with new people. Like I keep trying to work a different muscle because it does get tiring and you do get burnt out of the same suggestions or the same relationship scenes.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep finding a new thing to attach yourself and find the joy of in it.
But I thought your class was great. Mm-hmm. And I've told people that. It was very, very clear. And I'm very, you know what I mean? I'm like super particular because I've been doing it for so long and I've had so many teachers and I've, you know, been performing for, you know what I mean? Like maybe not as long as you, but a long enough time to where I'm like, I kind of have, you know, my point of view on things. Like I know myself really well. I'm not really looking to like take it to the next level. I just want to be at whatever level this was. And, I thought that, after I really found that, I feel like Nerdist was great and had a lot of different people from different places and different skill levels. And, I really liked it.
Cool. Is this you noting me right now?
It's all complimentary. I mean, it could have been like, you know. I just really enjoyed it. And I think it put me back in a place where I was like, cool. Like, I feel like confident again that, you know, I'm doing stand-up and I'm auditioning and stuff like that. I just feel like I needed that improv. You know, that improv thing kind of answers a lot of questions, I think. As far as like... confidence and how I feel about myself and like what's funny and interesting. And I thought people in the classes were really great too. And
yeah, but when people are excited, I think it's nice. I think also Yes And is a great sort of theory for life.
Sure.
Like just invigorating, like why aren't we taking these chances? Anding somebody else's like thought on something. And I think it's a good like way to look at things.
Yeah, it's the answer to all questions.
The
you know what I mean?
Cancer.
Improv.
If they just fucking yes and it.
Yeah. Oh, is yes and your password?
Yeah.
I knew it. I'm trying to figure out your password. So what's next for you?
I'm writing. I just finished a pilot, another one. So hoping to just like pitch these around. And then it's pilot season, so hoping to go out a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was had that guest spot. Do You Want to See a Dead Body that came out like a few weeks ago. Yeah. So,
I thought that was a segue. He's like, hey, do you want to see a dead body? Just side note. I was like, yeah, all right, I'll see a dead body.
You wanna see it?
Yeah, why not?
I never got to see one, but.
Well, you know what I mean?
One day.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a dead body.
Really?
I guess not.
Oh.
No, I guess I haven't.
Sorry.
Thank you.
That's a huge bummer.
Yeah, closed casket. I've never seen one.
Closed casket.
No, damn
That's your password. All right, thanks.
Yeah, death rattle. That's my password.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but just working.
Okay, yeah. This is fun. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Working for free without benefits.